This is Health First with Dave Fuller, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, Dr. Steve Barr is the director of Neuroscience Institute. He's also the author of the book Exercise Will Hurt You. We were talking about concussions before the break, and I can imagine that, I don't know if there's any studies, but I would assume that a lot of boys have concussions when they're kids. And maybe they don't even know it until they're adults, or maybe the realization now is, you know, that people are getting concussions more often than we used to think. What percentage of the population has had a concussion in your experience or in your research?
I don't know if there's any good numbers. I think there is a number that's floating out there that says there's 10 million head injuries a year.
Well,
and the I'm sorry, and that may be underreported. The actual number that occur, I don't have a good handle on. I don't really know what the number is. The incidence of them in youngsters, though, is a significant problem. And you're probably right that very aggressive play, especially among boys, could lead to minor concussions that aren't even recognized. Although I think now that as the information has become more public, that parents are recognizing it, too. And we're seeing that actually lead to parents being less willing to allow their children to play contact sports. The number of scholastic athletes going out for football is diminishing each year. Mm. So parents are becoming aware of this.
Let's talk about some of the most dangerous sports.
Sure.
What did you find are the sports that, as a parent, we should reconsider putting our kids in?
Well, I'm reluctant to use the word reconsider. Mm. What I want to do is tell people to educate themselves and then make decisions based on knowledge. Believe it or not, the most risky sport for concussions in high school athletes is cheerleading.
Cheerleading?
Cheerleading produces the highest incidence of concussions in scholastic athletics. Mm-hmm. And it's due to a lot of the tumbling that they're doing and the pyramids that they form and that sort of thing.
Wow. Huh?
So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be playing contact sports, football and hockey and that sort of thing. But certainly football and hockey and soccer are the three big sports that produce concussions because of the frequent head contact, head injury contact. The football, it's obvious, and hockey, not so much at the scholastic level, but as they get older and they get into high school and college, it gets rougher. We all know what the NHL's like. It's really a free-for-all in the NHL, and soccer with heading is a problem. There are movements out there among scholastic athletic associations, especially in junior high school and high school levels, to ban certain kinds of practices, to ban heading in soccer, to ban all contact in hockey, to outlaw certain kinds of tackling in football, which we've already seen. There's a program out there that's called Heads Up Football, where you run with your head up, you never put your head down, you never spear, you never tackle with your head first. So those sorts of things are movements that are out there to try to improve the safety of scholastic sports. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it. High school football is a religion in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't ever see the end of it unless one of two things happens. Parents just stop allowing their kids to go out for it, or lawsuits. Put an end to it because the high schools and maybe even colleges can't afford the liability.
You know, are there any sports or any exercise that you would endorse as in terms of being low risk for injury?
Sure. I think, and even some of the higher risk sports can be played with a lower risk of injury, but certainly anything that's non-contact. Swimming is great. Uh-huh. I mean, swimming is an excellent sport. It really works everything out. It's aerobic. It builds muscle, and as long as you don't drown, there's not too much that can go wrong. The indoor exercise, treadmills, stair steppers, bicycles, that sort of thing, are pretty safe as long as you pay attention to your joints. And in those kinds of situations, the injuries you're going to get are going to be musculoskeletal and joint. And as long as you don't let something go unattended to, you're probably not going to harm yourself doing that sort of thing. what you take yourself out of by riding your bike indoors and using a stair stepper indoors or a treadmill indoors is you get rid of the environmental problems. You don't, it's rare to fall off a stationary bike, but people always fall off of road bikes. It's rare to harm yourself running on a stair step or on a treadmill, but running outdoors, there's all kinds of things that can happen to you. You can, if you're running in a field, you can step in a hole, you can be hit by a car, you can be chased by a dog. And there's any number of things that can happen to you over and above the musculoskeletal injuries that kind of come with the sport as a given. So, but skiing, I think skiing is terrific, and I use that in my book as a, an example of a sport that's gone a long way to try to increase the safety. Better clothing, better boots, better skis, better bindings, helmets. When I started skiing as a kid, no one wore helmets. Now everybody wears helmets. All of that are positive developments in a sport that has an inherent degree of danger, and it lessens the danger. Football, again, rule changes, teaching athletes to tackle safely, to not use your head going forward, to outlaw certain kinds of tackles that they've done in the NFL.
You argue that there's certain sports that should be illegal.
Just one. Yeah, boxing.
Boxing. Why is that now?
I consider a sport a competition. You're either competing against another individual, you're competing against the clock, or you're competing against a team. In boxing, the object is to create a head injury. The object of boxing is to knock out your opponent. And you do that by giving them a head injury that's severe enough to make them unconscious. I can, as a neurosurgeon, how can I endorse anything like that? How can I say that that's something that should be allowed? In non-professional boxing, the goals are different. And the headgear is used. There's no headgear used in professional boxing. So there are certain safety mechanisms built into non-professional boxing.
Would you write?
Even so, if you strike the head with a glove, even if it's a big, soft boxing glove, and even if the person is wearing a headgear, you're still going to snap that head and create motion of the brain within the skull, which is what causes the concussion.
What about the mixed martial arts? What's your take on that?
Again, those are as far as I know, and I don't have a great deal of experience with those, I think the object there is to pin the person or gain certain points. Anything that that has as its goal a knockout, that's just another form of boxing. Hmm. But if it's something like the martial arts that I'm most familiar with, because I used to practice judo and I've done aikido, those are not designed to create injury. You can injure somebody, certainly, but the object is to overcome a person using the techniques inherent in the sport. I don't have any problems with those, but again, you have to understand that there's a good chance you'll hurt yourself somewhere along the line participating in those.
Doctor, in your book, Exercise Will Hurt You, you got some funny stories about people getting hurt from exercising, and not that getting hurt is funny, but tell us a couple of those stories.
Well, a lot of them are mine, and one that's that I talk about early on is when I was playing basketball in junior high school, and I took a pass from somebody, and I put both my hands out to catch the pass, and the ball hit straight on the end of my fingers. And, of course, it hit the two fingers that stick out the furthest in anybody's hand. Those are the middle fingers, and I broke the last knuckle on both of those fingers, so the fingers had to be splinted in extension for 6 weeks. And so I was walking around, you know, high school, you can imagine, with my middle finger splinted in extension.
Yeah.
You can imagine the reactions from my friends and the things that they would say to me.
Uh-huh.
The injury that isn't really so funny, but bothered me a lot, and was one of the things that was the impetus for writing the book, or at least finishing the book, was my riding a bike, and I broke my wrist without even falling.
How did you do that?
I was on the road. I was riding on a road, and it was a road bike, not an off-road bike. And I kind of drifted off onto the shoulder, and there was a little dip, a little edge to the asphalt from the road surface to the shoulder. And when I turned my wheel back into the edge of the road to get back onto the road, the wheel impacted that edge of road and sent a shockwave up my front fork into the handlebars where I was holding on, and it broke my wrist. And I didn't fall. I actually got back up on the road surface and continued to ride, and I just thought I had jammed my thumb. But what ended up happening is I broke one of the bones in my wrist, which can be a bad injury. It's the type of, it is a particular fracture that has a high incidence of failure to heal, what they call non-union. And for a surgeon, that can be a career-ending injury. So I was very concerned about that injury. What was unusual about it, maybe not so funny, was the fact that it happened without really injuring myself, without really falling or doing anything other than just having the front of my bike hit a little edge of asphalt and create a little shockwave. I mean, how many of us have ridden a bike up over a curb and had an impact of the curb into the front wheel and just go on riding? But, you know, there's an example.
Now, you know, I'm sure there's people listening that are saying there's probably at least two bodies of people. One is saying, this is awesome because it's probably the best book in the world and I'm going to use it for avoiding exercise. And there's another group that's saying, oh boy, you know, well, maybe there's three, but, you know, maybe there's another group that's saying, well, there's a lot of risk out there in sports and maybe I should take some heed of this. What are some of the, you know, we only have a couple minutes left, but what are some of the things that you, that they're not going to quit exercising that you can be telling them that they should be doing while they're exercising?
And I don't want anybody out there to get the impression I'm saying don't exercise. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned
I'm not hearing
couch
that.
Potato. Yeah. Don't be a couch potato. Yeah. Continue to move your body through space. It's important. It's good for your health. Just make sure you do what's appropriate for your age. I'm a baby boomer, and I spend a lot of my time talking to baby boomers. We are the first generation that incorporated exercise as part of our lifestyle. My parents never did that, but we did. Uh-huh. What we forgot to do is remember that we got older, and now we're in our 60s and beyond. We can't do what we did in our 30s and 40s. So use some common sense and alter your sporting events, your sporting activities, and your exercise activities based on what you can really do. If you need help, get an exercise physiologist to help you. But mostly listen to your body and try not to overdo it. And I only jokingly would recommend that someone use the book as an excuse not to exercise. I think people might have a tendency to do that. I hope they don't. I don't exercise a lot, but I exercise enough that I think that I am helping myself. And I do exercise based on what I can do comfortably. It doesn't hurt me. That is appropriate for my age and my overall general conditioning. And if something happens to me, I pay a great deal of attention to it. I talk in the book about listening to the pain of your body, that the whole no pain, no gain philosophy is crazy, that no pain is good. It's not that no pain means you don't gain. No pain means you're doing things right, and you're not hurting yourself. So I would hope that people use this as a way to educate themselves as how to stay active, how to exercise, do what they want to do, and do it safely and with reduced chances of harming themselves.
Dr. Baer, it's a fascinating topic, and it's one that we don't see very often. The book is called Exercise Will Hurt You. Where is it available? I guess
it's online at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and most of the places where you can buy books online. It can be downloaded for e-readers. I have a website, exercisewillhurtyou.com, if you want to order it through that. Some of the bookstores do carry it. Barnes & Noble carry it. Barnes & Noble carries it. I don't know if you're in Canada. I don't know what the big bookstores are in Canada.
I'm sure Amazon might be one of them.
Well, Amazon certainly has it online.
Yeah. Dr. Baer, thanks for coming on the show. It's been great having you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Bryce Wild about some of the things you can do to stay flu-free this Christmas.